And now Seabrook will snap it around the boards. McQuaid holds it in. Right side Sagan. Paye left circle. Rickshot score! Sam Paye from the left wing side wins it in OT! And the Bruins split the first two games in Chicago!
Talking sports in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Is my mic on? There we go. All right, so that was Saturday night in Chicago. Daniel Paye scores the overtime winner, gives us one heck of a series heading back to Boston for Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final as we welcome you into the Big Show on a Monday afternoon. Pat Steinberg along with you, kicking you off at 1 o'clock. Steinberg and Kerr for the rest of the week. And the Bruins, after getting completely run around in the first period at the United Center on Saturday, are able to claw their way back, tie the game at 1, and eventually use Daniel Paye's overtime winner to force make it where we are right now. And that is a 1-1 series tie heading into Game 3 of this series tonight on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's a 6 o'clock start. We'll carry it for you immediately following the Big Show. And really not a whole lot of change. The only real big change is what's going to happen in terms of the Chicago lineup. We'll get to that in just a second. I like what Boston did, though, in, I guess, the remaining 40-plus minutes of that game. I mean, they deserve to hang their heads. They deserve to be pretty embarrassed about their performance in the opening 20 minutes. Chicago comes out and they score the opening goal thanks to Patrick Sharp. And, you know, they could have scored two or three other goals there or more. And if it wasn't for Tuukka Rask, who was able to keep the Bruins in that first period, I mean, we're talking about what could have been a pretty lopsided game. But I really like the response. I like the way they were able to hone things back in, outshoot the Blackhawks in the second period, and make it so that the game was played much more on their terms. Very much like the way Game 1 was played. Let's not forget, Game 1 had to go to triple overtime, which I had the pleasure of being able to watch in Chicago, not at the United Center, but still had the pleasure to be able to watch in downtown Chicago, which was pretty cool. But and that was a game that was played the way the Bruins want it too. And they just got beaten by the Blackhawks in a very close game. We're talking about the two best teams in the NHL. So the Blackhawks can play the Bruins the way the Bruins want to play. And the Blackhawks were playing the way they wanted to play in the first period. Boston was able to kind of even that score. And we had ourselves another really close game in Game 2. So far, so good for the Stanley Cup Final. It's been a lot of fun. And I'm really looking forward to the series shifting back to Boston in Game 3 tonight. So Victor Stahlberg will return to the lineup for the Blackhawks. A lot of people scratching their heads as to why Stahlberg wasn't playing in Games 1 and Games 2. I was one of them. Brandon Bolduc seems like the nicest guy in the world, but it seemed a little odd that he would be playing. I get that Boston is physical and in your face and can push you around. I get all of that, but Bolduc's just not a great hockey player, and you kind of need good hockey players in the Stanley Cup Final. So I question that decision. I know a lot of Blackhawks fans were questioning that decision specifically following Game 2, as it was Bolduc's soft play on the sideboards that led to the eventual game winner from Dan Paye. So no Bolduc. Stahlberg's in his first game of the series, and he spoke to our Gene Principe in Boston this morning.
One loss on the part of the Chicago Blackhawks and one lineup change, and that's good news for Victor Stahlberg because he is the change. How do you feel about stepping into a cup final that's already a couple of games through?
Yeah, it's exciting. Obviously, as I said plenty of times, it's frustrating watching this. Something no player wants to go through, especially in a final. So you know, I'm going to do everything I can here to make a difference tonight and go out and hopefully be part of this going forward.
Did you think you might get a chance to come in? Because as you know in the hockey world, if the team is winning generally, the coach won't make any changes.
Yeah, I think I was hoping to get a chance at some point in the final. I think before the first game, Q told me I was to stay ready and be prepared to get back in there. So if it's going to happen for this game or not, I didn't know, but I found out last night, so obviously exciting and just looking to bring everything I can here tonight.
What's the biggest way do you think you might be able to impact a Boston team and a Boston defense that can be quite strong?
Yeah, they are big and strong. I think the way to beat them is with speed, and that's certainly something I think I can bring to the table. So, you know, they've been playing well, but I think the the stretches we've been playing well is when we were really going and have our speed going. So if we can keep that going here tonight, it's going to be a good match for sure.
Victor, thank you, and enjoy the cup final now that you're in it.
Yeah, thanks.
There's Victor Stahlberg, who will make his cup final debut, at least with the Blackhawks tonight, as they take on the Boston Bruins in Game 3. Brandon Bolig out, Victor Stahlberg in. That's your one lineup change from a Chicago side of things. Nothing for the Boston Bruins, and it's probably the right move to make if you're the Chicago Blackhawks. That city was a buzz. It was cool being there during Games 1 and 2 of the Stanley Cup Final. Unfortunately, did not get into the United Center. It just was not meant to be. We tried. Don't get me wrong. We tried, but just could not get into the United Center without really breaking the bank. And, well, I'm just not in a spot to really break the bank at this point, but was able to enjoy the splendor of being in a city in the Stanley Cup Final. In fact, so in the last number of years, obviously it was in this city when the Flames went to the Cup Final back in 04, but that's almost 10 years ago. It was 2 years ago when I got the opportunity to be in Vancouver for a couple of games of the Cup Final there, and that was kind of cool. And then being in Chicago for the Cup Final these past two games. It's a buzzing city. Everybody's wearing Blackhawks stuff from all walks of life. Everybody's wearing Blackhawks stuff, and whether it's Kane jerseys or Taves jerseys, a lot of Duncan Keith jerseys, and where our hotel was, it looks right out on the Chicago River, a huge banner that has the Hawk symbol hanging right on the Chicago River, and then the building right beside, so I stayed right on, it's called Wacker Drive. I was in Wacker and Wabash, and right beside my hotel was a building, a lot of buildings, and the building at night has the lights turned off, so it says Go Hawks on it all the way down the diagonal. So it's Go horizontally and then underneath in a diagonal Hawks. It's about a 60-story building, and they turn the lights on in specific offices to spell it out. I thought that was kind of cool, too. So it's a buzzing city right now in Chicago, and the Hawks now will try and steal one in Boston, and we'll see how this series looks as it goes back to Game 5 at the United Center. Games 3 and 4 in Boston, both games here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Welcome to the Big Show on a Monday afternoon. Steinberg along with you. Coming up this hour, some draft talk. J.C. LaPon of the Kamloops Blazers is going to stop by. He's one of those guys that we're really not sure where he's going to go. Is he a guy that somebody takes a flyer on in round two, somewhere mid-round two? Maybe. Is he a guy that drops to the fourth or the fifth round? Yeah, there's a possibility of that, but J.C. LaPon had himself a breakout season with the Blazers. He's an overager, though. A lot of these guys are 18 who are getting drafted. LaPon's 19. He made impact with the Blazers, makes Team Canada at the World Juniors, but then also gets suspended at the World Juniors. J.C. LaPon coming up at 1:25 this afternoon. Our draft coverage really starting to ramp up now as we move closer to June 30th. And some open phone time. We're going to talk some Flames in just a second, and a little bit later on, I've got a question I want to pose to you when it comes to one of the big rumors when it comes to this Flames team ahead of the draft coming up in New Jersey at the end of the month. Alain Vigneault apparently is the new head coach of the New York Rangers. This according to the Vancouver Sun, a report coming out in the last half hour that says AV and the Rangers have agreed in principle on a contract that could be made official today in Manhattan. The Post reported Sunday, the New York Post did, that the delay in confirming Vigneault's hiring may be due to discussions between the Rangers and the Canucks over the 2 years remaining on Vigneault's contract. He was fired back on May 22nd, 2 weeks after Vancouver was eliminated in the first round of the playoffs. The Rangers, of course, fired John Tortorella 1 week after Alain Vigneault was dismissed. So both teams are looking for new coaches. There's this fun rumor out there that has them just swapping. Tortorella will go to Vancouver and Alain Vigneault will go to New York. Don't know how realistic or how much we actually see Tortorella going to the Vancouver Canucks. However, it looks like Vigneault is going to the New York Rangers. And it's the right call. It really is. I mean, he's the right fit for New York. The guy has coached as a head coach in two NHL cities, and both of those cities, the spotlight is glaring. Obviously, the hardest, the most intense, and the least friendly spotlight comes in Montreal. It's not as if it's a whole lot better in Vancouver, especially with the expectations the Canucks have had the last number of years. And now you're going to New York, where, again, the media spotlight shines huge. I think that he'll be perfectly ready to take on the pressures and all that goes on with being a head coach in New York. I really believe that he'll be fine with that. And on top of that, he does well with personalities. And the guy is a good coach. The guy gets the most out of players. The guy puts players in the best spots to succeed. I think Alain Vigneault in New York is a pretty darn good match. I think he'll have success there. So looking forward to seeing how that goes. And now I don't have to hate Alain Vigneault anymore. He's not the coach of the Canucks. I've always respected the guy as a head coach. I think he is one of the brighter minds, and it's less so his ingenuity or innovations or anything like that. The thing with Alain Vigneault that I've always liked is his ability to run the bench. The way that he runs that bench on the fly, the way that he engineers matchups, there are few guys better at the tactical side of coaching than Alain Vigneault. That's one of the things I've always really appreciated about him. So let's see how he does in New York, and let's see when that news ends up getting confirmed. The Calgary Flames, who gave us no shortage of stories, and look who we have in for the week. Rob Kerr is here. It all seems too conveniently planned. I think Rob Kerr's got his fingers in the pie. I think Kerr is manipulating things, so all the big stories hit on the week that he comes in and does the show with us. I'm not putting it past the guy. The Brendan Shanahan rumor came out on Friday, and it's kind of had legs since then. Of course, we had it confirmed that Shanahan was in the city to meet with Ken King. And the organization Sportsnet was on top of the story. John Shannon was on top of the story. And John Shannon joined the morning show this morning on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Of course, Brendan Shanahan is involved with the NHL's Department of Player Safety right now, but him having a meeting here in Calgary had people all kinds of speculating, whether it was, is he going to replace Jay Feaster? Is he going to replace Bob Hartley? Or what a lot of people thought it was going to be, and that is a restructuring of the Flames organization. Here's what John Shannon can tell us. He was the guy who was on top of the story on Friday and Saturday.
Well, the meeting was on Friday in Calgary between games one and two of the final. And Brendan flew, I assume, flew in for the day. So when I got to him on Saturday, he did confirm to me that, yes, in fact, he was in a position to talk to Murray and Ken King about a job within the organization. There was no specific, it's the president or it's the head of the hockey ops or whatever. So, but yeah, that's exactly what's happened.
So what exactly is going to be the case? Everybody came out and it seemed as if the prevailing theory was, okay, well, there's going to be some sort of restructure. Ken King will move here and Brendan Shanahan will come in and be the head of hockey operations. And who knows what that means for Jay Feaster and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, that specific storyline, whether it's true or not, that seems to be what a lot of people had settled on. At least I was not here. I was reading along on Twitter while I was on vacay and all that type of thing. But here's what John Shannon had to say about that. Is if Brendan Shanahan and this Flames link goes beyond one dinner, does it mean that Shanahan's coming in to be the director of hockey operations or a position similar?
I can tell you that they're doing a restructure.
Yeah.
That we know they're doing a restructure. They're looking at the whole operation. I was told by somebody very close to the organization, in fact, that yes, they were looking at the whole thing from top to bottom, and looking at all the people that work in the organization to try to find what I would describe as a championship opportunity.
And I don't think that is massive news. The news here is that Shanahan's involved. That to me is the news. The news as to the Flames are looking at making or doing a restructure, to me, that's not big news, because I've kind of believed that's been the end game here for a little while. When John Davidson's name was linked to the Flames last summer, that was the same thing. I believe that the Flames are looking at doing some sort of restructure at some point. And I believe that they, or they're not writing it off anyway. I believe that they would like to go in the same route as what they have in New York or what they have in Toronto with MLSE, and have one guy overseeing it and then having one guy kind of oversee each team. They've got all four entities under their umbrella now in this city. It would just make sense. And from a business perspective, whether you're on board with the job he's done or on or not on board with the job he's done, it just makes sense for Ken King to move up or Ken King. Yeah, it just all of it makes sense. So that was my feeling when John Davidson's name was linked to this team last summer, and it's the same thing now that we're hearing with Brendan Shanahan's name being linked to this team now. I believe that there are other candidates, or they would at the very least be kicking tires elsewhere. I don't think they're sold on one guy, and I don't think it means necessarily that we're going to see this happen right away, or we're going to see this in place for next season. I just think that with the overall way that this team is going, it's inevitable that that's the way that this ends up. It's inevitable that that type of structure is what we'll see, whether it's 2 years from now or whether it's tomorrow. So that's kind of what I got from the Brendan Shanahan thing. But obviously, it's going to continue to be a story, and we'll keep our eye on that. The other story is what Elliot Friedman had to say on the satellite hot stove, or they don't call it the satellite hot stove, the hot stove on Hockey Night in the first intermission of game, second intermission of game two. And that would be the Flames, from the sources and the people that he's talked to, the Flames had made an offer to the Colorado Avalanche. They had made an offer for all three of their first-round picks to try and move up and get that number one overall pick. That came from Elliot Friedman. He joined the morning show once again this morning and kind of expanded upon that.
They made the offer, and you know, what happened was Colorado's thought about it and said no, and I think that, you know, I asked a few people for their reactions to it too, and they all said that Jay made the offer probably knowing it would not be accepted. They said it was certainly worth a shot because the first couple of players you know, are that special, and you know, when they thought about it, if they were in his position, they probably would have tried the same thing. And you know, the other thing, too, is that there was only one person who I asked who thought it would be a bad move for the Flames, and his only complaint was that, you know, the Flames are really trying to rebuild. Would you rather have three first-round draft picks than the one? But they all agreed that if you think there's a player there that is your core, that is a cornerstone guy who can change you that much, it's worth an attempt.
And I agree. And look, I mean, I believe the report. I believe that Elliot Friedman is, I believe that it's the case. I absolutely think the Flames have been rather vigorously banging down doors, or at the very least trying to get their foot in ones with Colorado, with Florida, with Tampa, with the teams in front of them, but specifically in that top three mix, and they wouldn't be doing their due diligence otherwise. And, you know, I got into some interesting battles, not battles, but some interesting conversations on Twitter on Saturday night when this story came out. And if it's me, and this story is ironclad, which I believe it is, and if the Flames have made that offer to the Colorado Avalanche, I think it's the right offer. And if I was the Flames and the Avalanche said yes to that, I would make that deal 10 times out of 10 if I'm the Flames. And I know there are some who disagree with it, but knowing that specifically you would have the opportunity to draft a franchise player like a Nathan MacKinnon, that to me is worth three lower picks. It really is, because MacKinnon is a guy that comes along very, very rarely. He is one of those straight-up potential generational players, and this organization needs that guy. And so, yeah, I would make that deal every single time if I'm the Flames. I wouldn't make that deal, though, if I'm the Colorado Avalanche. I just wouldn't. If I've got the number one overall pick, and I've got an opportunity out of MacKinnon, or in their case, a Seth Jones, which is exactly what they need in so many ways, and again, another potential generational player, I'm not making that move if I'm Colorado. So the fact that this story says that they made it and the Avalanche said no doesn't surprise me. I've long believed that moving up in the 2013 draft into the top three is going to be next to impossible. Does not preclude you from trying. In fact, it behooves you to try. I mean, you have to go out. You have to do your due diligence. And I think the Flames should be asking Florida, and probably have asked Florida, the same thing. But I just think it's going to be so hard to move up in this year's draft because of the type of player you potentially have. That's no knock on the top threes in the last number of years. But I mean, when was the last time, from the drafts that we've seen, from the last three that Edmonton had, from Taylor Hall to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Nail Yakupov, the Oilers never moved their pick, and they could have. They could have easily moved it if they wanted, but they didn't. When you've got the opportunity to draft that type of player who is a pretty darn close consensus number one overall pick, you're not really going to do it. Boston didn't move their number two overall pick once they had it. I know Toronto moved theirs, but they didn't know they'd be drafting number two overall. you don't see that. And you've got an opportunity this year. You throw Drouin into the mix and probably Barkov into the mix, and you've got guys who could go number one overall in a lot of other years. And I just don't think it makes a whole lot of sense for the teams that hold those picks to be dealing it unless it's a can't-miss deal. And for me, three lower picks and two in the bottom half of the first round, to me, that's not can't miss. So I wouldn't have done it if I was Colorado. I would if I were the Flames, and I would certainly make the offer to the Avalanche every time, but I'm just not surprised that they were rebutted there. Still, I think the Flames will be continuing to try to move up. I think the Flames will do all they can to get themselves into it, but in the end, they finished with the sixth overall pick. That's still what my gut says is where they're going to draft. I still think that their first pick will go at number six overall. Pat Steinberg along with you on the big show this afternoon. We'll have some draft talk in just a second with a potential prospect. He's probably not going to go in the first round, but he's got himself a really interesting story and had himself a really good year. JC LaPon in just a second. Just want to make sure that we put out there that Sportsnet 960 proud to announce Matthew Good at the Jack Singer Concert Hall coming up on November 15th and 16th. So two shows, intimate at the Jack. Tickets on sale Friday, June 21st for Ticketmaster. So Sportsnet 960 excited to announce Matthew Good coming in November, and happy to bring him back to Calgary. And we'll get into some draft talk in just a second. JC LaPon had himself a great year, goes to the World Juniors, a banner year with the Kamloops Blazers. So a breakout season, what does that mean for his draft class? What does that mean for his draft status? We'll find out from the man himself when we come back. Some draft talk next. This is the big show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Big Show continues, brought to you by The Comedy Cave. The best comedy for the cheapest price, only $10. Visit ComedyCave.com for daily specials and showtimes. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All right, welcome back. Pat Steinberg along with you this afternoon. We welcome in Rob Kerr to the program. He's with us for the entire week, so Robbie joins in at 2 o'clock. We've got draft coverage starting for you next week here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Guess that's really the way it was. Next week is when our draft coverage starts. Holy cow. We leave on Thursday of next week for New York, New Jersey, and then we're there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for the 2013 NHL Draft. Our coverage is brought to you by Shaganapi Insurance Services LTD. Get the personal touch for your home, auto, or life insurance. The friendly staff at Shaganapi Insurance are ready to answer your call and guide you through your needs. Like Shaganapi Insurance on Facebook. Also brought to you by Pete the Plumber, Varsity Chrysler, and Bluegrass Nursery Sod and Garden Center. So we've got all kinds of draft coverage, and part of our draft coverage is we got some prospects to talk to as we lead up to it. Let's go down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Tank Hotline, welcoming a guy who certainly had himself a breakout year in the Western Hockey League. In 61 regular season games with the Kamloops Blazers, JC LaPon had 36 goals and 89 points. He added 23 more points in 17 playoff games for the Blazers. Pretty darn good year for the 19-year-old. JC LaPon of the Kamloops Blazers joining us right now. JC, I got to ask you, here you are. You're just over a week away from the draft. I mean, what are the feelings like? Are we talking about nerves? Are we talking about excitement? How you feeling?
Yeah, I guess I'm pretty anxious. I guess it's coming up here pretty quick, so just kind of anxious to see where I may fall. But, no, I'm definitely really excited that something good might happen.
Now, do you have a game plan set up? Are you heading to New Jersey? Are you going to be there? Are you staying back in Regina? Like, what's your game plan?
No, I'm going to just be staying here with my family here. Just, I'm an overager, so I just figure I'll spend the time here and, just keep training. And I've been on a few trips already, so, maybe save some money.
So is it going to be one of those things where you're going to try and stay busy until you get that phone call?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I guess I'll be watching it that day, but no, I think it's that's a long weekend, so I'll be at the lake.
That's probably the best way to go about it. JC LaPon of the Kamloops Blazers joining us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline. Well, I look back on the season for you. First of all, for the team, I know that the postseason had a disappointing ending, but overall had to be a pretty gratifying year for you. How would you look back on the season with the Blazers?
No, definitely a lot of good things happened, not only for the team, but for myself. And, looking back on it, not much more could have gone right, except for, obviously we went to the conference finals and had a tough go with the Portland Winterhawks. But, everything went really good. you know, I developed, I think, as a player and, you know, as a person, and, you know, learned a lot.
You had yourself a heck of a team. You were battling for top spot in the Western Hockey League for a good chunk of the year. Overall, I mean, just how good a group was that to play with this year?
Yeah, it was a good group. You know, we had, we didn't really have too many guys that were drafted on the team or signed or big names, so we kind of, you know, made a statement for ourselves and, you know, had a really good season and, you know, made it all the way to the conference finals, but definitely it was a disappointed group after we lost out.
What do you think happened? I mean, obviously you go up against a really good team in the Portland Winterhawks, but how would you take a look back at that conference final?
You know, obviously there's times, you know, just one period you take off and, you know, that can kind of be the difference or, you know, a few games we were a little undisciplined, but, you know, looking back on it, there's obviously things you'd change, but, you know, it is what it is and hockey's a game of mistakes, so.
J.C. LaPonta of the Kamloops Blazers joining us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline ahead of the 2013 NHL Draft. And you kind of touched on your growth as a player, and you know, you have your best statistical season by far in the Western Hockey League. What type of growth did you experience this past year?
Well, I think kind of started last year. You know, I was developing and, you know, playing a bigger role on my team as an 18-year-old. And then over the summer, I guess it was just I was going to push for some more, and you know, everything kind of clicked this year, and you know, can't complain much about it, but you know, I don't think I'm done developing yet, and just hopefully get better over the summer and go somewhere next year.
What more do you want to see, or what more do you think you need to work on in terms of developing?
You know, everything, you can kind of just always touch up. You know, obviously my game is a speed game, power forward, so you know, just touching up little things in the defensive zone and, you know, just getting faster, getting bigger, getting stronger. So, you know, everything can use touch-ups.
Is that how you define yourself, a power forward? That's the type of guy you see yourself as going forward?
Yeah, for sure. You know, for a bit in October, I was kind of shying away from being my power forward. And obviously, I was getting points and stuff. My coach was just like, you know, we need you to be a power forward too. And, you know, I think that's how I can be the most effective on a team.
And I know that you're going through your summer training right now, so what's the biggest focus? Are we talking about putting on some bulk, putting on some size? Is that one of the things that you're focusing on?
Yeah, I'm just going to, you know, about 185 right now. I'd like to get to 190, and, you know, you don't want to get too bulky because I'm kind of a springy player and you want to be loose and, you know, just working on little things like your hips, just everything, you know. There's lots of key areas you can work on being a hockey player.
J.C. LaPonta's with us at the Kamloops Blazers. The World Junior experience for you this year, you've had a number of months now to digest it. I remember talking to you in Calgary the day that you got picked for the team, and you looked like you were flying sky high. Is it still that type of experience for you?
Yeah, for sure. Well, obviously, it wasn't the result we wanted, but I kind of look back on it still, and it's just like, you know, it was pretty crazy that you were there and just with all those high-end players and playing with that type of talent. So, you know, obviously there's a few things I'd change there, maybe not getting suspended, but it is what it was, and you know, it was a good experience.
What does a guy like you learn from that? I mean, the experience itself, the best players in the world in your age group, and you're doing it thousands of miles away from home. Overall, what do you learn from that experience?
Well, you learned a lot. You know that it was different, obviously, playing on the big ice and obviously with international rules. But at the same time, you know, going even to the trial camp, you know, it was hard for me to think that, oh, I can make this team. And, you know, when I made it and went over there and actually started playing, it was nice to see that, you know, I can play with these guys. And, you know, that was kind of a good feeling for myself.
Now, as we get set for the NHL draft, tell me about the process leading up and overall, just there's so much that a prospect has to do. How has it kind of gone for you?
Well, obviously, once the season ends, you start getting emails from teams to do, like, personality tests and whatnot. And, you know, you do a few of those, and then some teams want to take it to a personal interview. You go for lunch or whatever. They kind of not interrogate you, but just kind of see what kind of person you are. And then there's some teams that think they have a feel for your character. So, you know, I've done a few of those, and then I've also I went to Chicago for their combine testing down there, and you do a few ice times, and that was a really good experience. I went to the game there too, where Kane had a hat trick against LA there, so it's pretty cool.
Now, I guess you've been asked this question a million times, but if you were to answer the question, okay, how do you see yourself as an NHLer? How do you see yourself projecting to the next level? How have you answered that question?
Obviously, for me, I think I'm a pretty versatile player. You know, I can play a fourth, third line role, but you know, if you give me time, I think I can play a second line role too. So I don't really know. I think I can fit in anywhere and you know, be an asset. But you know, I think I'm a little bit of a project. I'll have a few more years before hopefully being there. But you know, it's kind of exciting, but there's a lot of work ahead.
It's been a fun process, though.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, looking back when you're 17 and you have the, I didn't struggle when I was 17, but I was kind of a scrappier fighter and just having lots of fun. And then, kind of developing as a player and seeing the good things that can happen is pretty cool.
Well, JC, I really appreciate you taking some time out with us this afternoon, and I know that you got plenty of training before we get to draft day, and plenty of stuff still to come. But good luck at the end of the month, and thanks so much for doing this today.
All right, thank you.
There is JC Lapon of the Kamloops Blazers joining us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline. So here's a guy that really could end up going. He might jump up. He might be a guy that, as he said himself, he sees himself kind of as a project. He might be a guy who's able to move up, and maybe a team takes a flyer on him in the second round. I mean, Mitch Meraz is a guy who wasn't supposed to go in the second round last year, but the Edmonton Oilers jumped up and picked him right at the top of the second round, kind of raising some eyebrows. Now, the Oilers saw him up close and personal. He played with the Edmonton Oil Kings, continues to play with the Edmonton Oil Kings in the Western Hockey League, so maybe there's a little bit of the reason why, but who's to say that the Vancouver Canucks are right there close to Kamloops looking and say, hey, JC Lapon, we've seen him play lots. Let's take a closer look at him. Maybe they jump up and pick him a little higher than perhaps a lot of people see him going. Could he fall into the fourth or fifth round? Yeah, he's a 19-year-old. A lot of times 19-year-olds don't have the same type of cachet, so we'll see. He's certainly one of those guys, though, that I'm intrigued to see where he ends up finishing and where he ends up getting picked. I like him. He's certainly done a lot of evolving and developing as a player, and he's a fun one to watch. So NHL entry draft coming your way next week. We're all over it here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And hey, very proud to have our four sponsors on board, including Pete the Plumber, your superheroes of plumbing and heating. Call Pete the Plumber for all your plumbing, heating, and cooling needs. And I got to tell you, good to have Pete the Plumber back. It's been a long time. It seems like too long since Flames at Five's been on this station. Also, Varsity Chrysler, Shaganapi Insurance Services, LTD, and Bluegrass Nursery, Sod, and Garden Center. Again, our coverage starts next week here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan from New Jersey and the 2013 NHL Draft. Okay, we'll take a break. When we come back, a couple of things. We'll hear from Joe Haggerty in Boston. It sounds like we'll get Hags' thoughts on Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final as it shifts back to Boston. So Hags will join us in just a couple of minutes. On top of that, want to crack open the phone lines for a few minutes. I'll ask you this question straight up. We heard the rumor that the Flames offered their three picks for the number one overall pick. Their three first-round picks for Colorado's number one overall pick. I say I'd make that deal if I'm the Flames. If you're the Flames, if you're Jay Feaster, would you have made that deal? 403-240-4444, star 960 on Rogers Wireless. We'll get into that in the next segment as well. The Big Show is live on a Monday afternoon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's pretty awesome when you go into that building and listen to them, but our fans are very capable of doing the same thing. And we may not hold as much in our building, but the decibels will be just as good as it was at the United Center.
Talking the Stanley Cup playoffs right now. The Big Show continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
He's the head coach of the Boston Bruins. Claude Julien says, hey, it's going to be just as loud in our building tonight as it was in Games 1 and 2 of the Cup Final on Wednesday and Saturday of last week. if it's louder or not, who really cares? Fact of the matter is, it's going to be loud, it's going to be exciting, and we've seen two really exciting games so far in this Stanley Cup Final. Welcome back to the program. Pat Steinberg along with you. We'll get a Boston perspective on things in just a second, but you know, I talked about this about half an hour ago. I really liked the way Boston responded in the final 40-plus minutes of Game 2. I thought that they probably got themselves quite the wake-up call or quite the talking to or whatever you want to call it in between the first and the second period. But, man, I liked the way they responded, and I liked the way they came out and got things back closer to the pace that they like to play. And in the end, they only allow the one goal. Patrick Sharp's the only goal, or the only player who's able to get one by Tuukka Rask, who was very good in the first period, didn't need to be anywhere near as tested in the second and third period and into overtime. And if you're the Bruins, you were probably, in a lot of ways, feeling pretty ticked that you weren't able to come away with a victory in Game 1. Probably the same thing if you're Chicago. You're probably kind of feeling that you had your opportunity to put the nail in the coffin in the first period, and you weren't able to do so, and Boston comes away with a victory. Let's go down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline. Welcome in our good friend Joe Haggerty from CSN New England, at Hacks with Hags on Twitter, and of course in Boston right now getting set for Game 3. We just heard from Claude Julien. He says the buzz is going to be just as good in Boston as it was in Chicago. What's the buzz right now surrounding the Bruins?
The buzz is they're in a real good spot. Tied 1-1, coming back home for two games. They can really take control of the series and really put a stranglehold on the Chicago Blackhawks. They can win both of these games. Easier said than done, obviously, because they're two very good teams and two evenly matched teams. And, I think it's been a battle, obviously. It's easy to see that by virtue of the fact that they're both gone to overtime thus far in the first two. But you got to feel good if you're a Bruins fan because you've watched your team really battle. Tuukka Rask has been out of control good. The offense has provided a little bit of a spark here with some bottom six scoring. And the defense has been extremely good, I think, at slowing down the Chicago Blackhawks for most of the two games. I mean, that first period, notwithstanding, that was an absolute train wreck for the Bruins. They've been pretty solid in this series. But on the Blackhawks side, they've gotten some pretty good chances using their speed, and I think they saw something they liked using their speed to attack in that first period, and they're just going to have to find ways to generate that speed through the neutral zone and entering the offensive zone and really put the bigger, slower, stronger Bruins defenseman on guard a little bit.
Joe, what do you think happened between that first period in Game 2 when it was all Blackhawks and then in the final 40-plus minutes where the Bruins were able to get things back or closer to the way they want to play?
Well, I think it was a leadership group that's been together for a long time within the Bruins dressing room probably calling each other out a little bit. Probably a lot of airing of grievances about what they saw in the first period. I think there was definitely some of that, and I think that's what you get with a good team full of veterans that have played together for a long time and that have had success and failure. You get teams and you get players that can be honest with each other when they feel like they're not getting everything that they should and they're not playing close to as well as they should. And I'm sure there was a lot of people on the veteran side saying after that first 20 minutes that that's not even close to good enough in the Stanley Cup Finals, no matter who you're playing. Mm-hmm. And if they didn't step it up, they were going to lose, and they were going to get embarrassed in this game, and it was probably going to be a slow descent away from a Stanley Cup title. And, those guys in there are a proud bunch. They also know you don't get too many kicks in the can when you get to the Stanley Cup Finals, and you have to take advantage of it when you're there. And I think all of that was discussed in that quick intermission before they went out and played a hell of a lot better in the second and third and overtime.
Joe Haggerty's with us in Boston, CSN New England, joining us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline. And you talked about the way these two games have been played, how close they've been, the fact that both of them have gone to overtime. And I guess it's probably another indication as to how close this whole thing is, because if you're Chicago, you're probably feeling a little ticked that you didn't win Game 2 and you didn't take advantage of the opportunities you had. Same way Boston was probably feeling that about Game 1. It's probably another indicator as to how close this series has really been.
Yeah, there's no doubt there's been some regret on both sides. The Bruins could legitimately say and feel that they should be up 2-0 in this series going back home. And I'm sure the Chicago Blackhawks feel there are instances where they could say and feel the same exact way. Although, I will say that the Game 2 was a little more convincing than Game 1 after that first period. Once
Tuukka Rask had made those 18 saves and they'd escaped with just a 1-0 deficit. I really think the Bruins controlled the rest of that game as far as pace went and really had things going exactly the way that they wanted to. And by the overtime session, you could see that the Bruins laying hits on the Chicago defensemen and on their players through all that entire game had started taking their toll. I mean, you even saw guys like Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook having trouble breaking the puck out of their zone and having trouble simply getting it into the neutral zone and the offensive zone. And those guys are great puck movers. When they're having trouble getting it out of neutral in their own end, and obviously Yarmolson and Oduya were having the same thing after Lucic hit them time and time again, you could see the Bruins were exerting their will and slowing down the Blackhawks' attack, and I think that's their game plan throughout this entire series, and you saw it working in Game 2.
You used the term out of control in terms of the way Tuukka Rask has been, and in a good way. He's been out of his mind, certainly, in the first two games. Not as if he wasn't good in the first three rounds of the postseason as well. Is this playoffs, is this the arrival party of Tuukka Rask?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's already happened because he's basically announced to everybody that he's A, good enough to be a number one goaltender in the NHL, and he did that during the regular season, and now B, that he's good enough to be a goaltender on a team that can get to the Stanley Cup Finals and potentially win the whole thing and be a real strength to a team that's making a playoff drive like that. And, you know, there's only a handful of those goalies out there, and I think it's a really impressive feat what he's doing. But, you know, the whole key now, right, is getting those 16 wins that Tim Thomas got 2 years ago. He proved he was a Stanley Cup winning goaltender and a Conn Smythe winning goaltender with the performance that he had. I think Tuukka Rask is at a point now where he's done some great things, but he's got a pretty unique opportunity to finish it off and to create a real legacy for himself in Boston and make a hell of a lot of money for himself in the contract he's going to get after this year is up.
Hey, Joe, as always, appreciate this, man. It's a game day. Next time you're in Calgary, and we know you're coming to Calgary next year, we'll get you another Tim Hortons gift certificate. Thanks for doing this, man.
Oh, you got it. I love Canadian maple donuts, my friend, so I appreciate that in a big way.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, see ya.
There's Joe Haggerty, CSN New England, joining us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. Bruins and Hawks tonight. Game 6 is game 3 goes at 6 o'clock back in Boston, and it's been close through games 1 and 2. I'm really looking forward to what we see tonight. We'll have it for you here, right here, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Big Show wants to hear from you. Call now, 403-240-4444 or star 960 on Rogers Wireless.
Probably a good idea that we'll hear from you for a little bit because apparently I can't get a word out edgewise. It's my first day back. 403-240-4444, star 960 on Rogers Wireless. The phone lines are open. Why, you ask? We heard that report on Saturday during the Satellite Hot Stove that the Flames had offered their first three picks, their three first-round picks in the NHL draft at the end of the month to the Colorado Avalanche for their number one overall pick. If I'm the Flames, I do that every single time. What about you, though? Would you make that move from a Flames perspective? Not from an Avalanche perspective, from a Flames perspective. We got a little bit of time to open up the phone lines at 403-240-4444, star 960 on Rogers Wireless. Man, I'd do it every single time. I'd be all over it. I think that this type of draft with a top end that is as good as it is this year and with guys like specifically MacKinnon and Jones, but you throw Drouin and Barkov in there. If you've got an opportunity to get a player like that, that's a potential franchise guy. And not to say you're not going to get really good players in the number 6 spot or the number 27 spot. Yeah, it's a deep draft, and I understand that. But a guy like MacKinnon or a guy like Drouin or a guy like Jones, that kick starts a rebuild in a snap of a finger, and you've got an opportunity to do that if you're the Flames. I'd be trying to knock down doors and get yourself up into the top three every single time, and that would mean trading those first three picks. Yeah, I'd be all over it. Let's welcome Cody to the program. Cody, you're up first. Would you do that deal if you're the Flames?
Absolutely, no doubt about it. No questions asked. I would absolutely do that in a heartbeat. Like you said, it's a potential franchise player, and they only come around, you know, not so often. And, yeah, no, I would do that hands down.
Yeah, and I appreciate the call, Cody. I just think that it gives you that shot in the arm, like, right away, and you're like, holy cow, this thing is on. And I think a guy like MacKinnon, and for me, it's MacKinnon. It's the no knock on Jones. I just think what the Flames need, straight up, If you were to say, what is the one thing the Flames need? Nathan MacKinnon. I really believe that. And you have the opportunity to bring that guy in. You have the opportunity to maybe add that to the to your organization. And, yeah, it might cost three first-round picks to do it. Look at when the Oilers had three first-round picks. You're saying you wouldn't trade that for a shot at Nathan MacKinnon? I know Gagner's one of them. But the other two? It's no sure thing. Just because you have a lot of them doesn't mean it's a sure thing. I think Nathan MacKinnon's pretty damn close to being a sure thing. 403-240-4444, star 960 on Rogers Wireless. Jerry, if you're the Flames, would you make that move?
Truth be told, I don't know. I mean, it'd be a sweet deal if you did get MacKinnon. But then again, if you look at it from the other side, you got three first-round picks. So there's three potential diamonds in the rough that you can develop and build in. Superstars, because you never know what you're going to get.
Okay, so Jerry, let me ask you this. Would you trade Sam Gagne, Alex Plante, and Riley Nash for an opportunity to draft number one overall? Because those are the three players the Oilers chose the last time they had three first-round picks.
Depends upon who the first-round pick is. If it's MacKinnon, then yes. If it isn't, then no.
Well, and I think that's who we're talking about. I think we're talking about MacKinnon, Jerry. So that's to me, I was like, yeah, absolutely you do it. In this draft, with that opportunity, I know it's a deep draft, but I also know who's at the top of the draft. And for me, yeah, I would basically sell the farm in a lot of ways within reason. And I think this is within reason.
What I'm looking at is you could have like a kid that you draft that could be like a potential, I don't know, Joel Nieuwendyk or Theo Fleury that you just might happen to lose out on.
Right. Well, and look, I get that, but I just, and Jerry, I appreciate the call, but I really believe you've got an opportunity here, and that opportunity, if you even have the slightest chance to make it happen, you've got to try. Well, welcome James to the program. James, would you do that deal and why?
I would. I'd do it for MacKinnon. I wouldn't do it for anybody else because I believe, like, getting a center is probably more important than getting a defenseman for the Flames right now. So that's the only thing that I would do. If it was MacKinnon, I would go for it. If not, I wouldn't. But one more thing, Pat. I hope the Flames stick with Feaster and Hartley. I know I've heard that Shanahan and I don't know who else is coming along, but I want to give these guys a chance. Thank you.
All right, man. Appreciate it. So he says only for MacKinnon. Probably really what it's all about for me. We're talking about number one overall. If you're drafting number one overall, I'm pretty sure you're taking MacKinnon if you're the Flames. Two more. We'll go to Derek. Derek, would you make that deal and why?
No, I wouldn't. And I only say that just because the team as a whole just needs a little bit more in the farm. What I might throw out there, I know that Colorado and Patrick Waugh and Sakic both have history with Alex Tanguay. I figure if you throw in a blue chip player like that, perhaps maybe the last two picks in the first round, at least keep the sixth.
No that, chance in my mind. And no knock on Tanguay, but Tanguay is over 30. And, yeah, he's still a very productive player. But a guy who's over 30 and then two picks in the bottom half of the first round for a chance at Nathan MacKinnon, I would put that in the no-chance motel.
I think that there's still an ability to probably make a deal, probably not to toss in the sixth, but maybe someone else in their farm as well. I don't know, I like maybe Sailhoff or something like that. That might kind of spike it up because I do know that the Avs are looking for a D, right?
So right.
There might be an opportunity to do something around, you know, around that line and still keep your six. I'm not sure. So.
All right, Derek. Well, I appreciate the call, man. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks, Pat.
And the final word goes to Ian. If you have an opportunity to trade the three first-round picks for the number one overall pick and you're the Flames, do you do that deal, Ian?
Where do I sign?
That's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, where do I sign? Of course I do it.
Well, why wouldn't you? And, you know, everybody says it's three for one. It's actually two for one.
Because yes, because you're still getting, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you know what? They could probably tie $1 million to Tanguay, and nobody's going to take him with his contract.
I mean, if they want to move him, that's a different topic. If they want to move him, I'm sure they could. But yeah, I'm with you. Where do I sign? Because and Kerr's just getting his 5,000 papers and binders ready to go here. But he joins us in about 5 minutes, and he's gone through and done the research of guys who. Percentage-wise, taken in the top five, and then as you go into the middle part of the first round, and then further on and further on, the percentage of guys who end up cracking and being NHL, impact NHLers, and it's exponentially higher when you're picking inside the top three or four. And I get it, it's a deep draft, and you've got number six, you've got the other two picks in the bottom half. I understand that, but still, the odds are working so much more in your favor if you're able to get into the top three. Appreciate the call, Ian. You have yourself a good day.
No problem, and you probably won't get another word in edgewise with Mr. Kerr coming in this afternoon anyways.
See what I can do. Thanks, man.
Bye.
We'll take a break. When we come back, Kerr's in. We've got plenty of texts. I'll get to them as well. There's a couple of interesting ones on that very topic. For me, I do it in a heartbeat. It's an interesting topic, an interesting conversation, and it'll be one of our big topics on the program this afternoon. We're in studio today, and you're locked on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.